Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Well, welcome to Gather Round. I'm Rosanna Marte-Pio, and in our first segment, we have, let me get his whole name here, Jonathan Frederick Vidal Marcus. And I must apologize. I tried to make it right. I did spell his last name wrong. So it is M-A-R-K-I-S. I had some feline help is what happened, Bilal. And I know better than to, you know, just let it go. I should have checked it over. But anyway, welcome back, my friend.
Thank you for having me back for the third time.
Well, yes, it's like every time something new comes out, we've got to have you on. So to start with, for listeners who may not know what we are talking about when we say that your son had a miracle comeback. In fact, you can read about it at www.miraclecomeback.com. Would you just give us the shortened version of what this is all about and when it happened, please?
Yes, I will. Back in 2009, the early summer of 2009, my two boys were involved in gangs a little bit, and they went back to a place they had just moved from, which was on the south side of Milwaukee, which was kind of dangerous, you know, and known for gang activities. Anyways, my older son, who was 16 at the time, now he's 20, rode his bicycle through a red light in the area where he wasn't supposed to be, and Rashid, his younger brother, who was about to be 13, stayed back and then rode his bicycle out without looking through a red light at one of the worst intersections in Milwaukee, which is 16th Greenfield. There's like five different streets going in five different directions. And he didn't make it to the other side. He was hit and run over by an SUV going east on Greenfield Avenue, which threw him and his bicycle into the westbound lane where he was hit and run over by a second SUV.
Well, and this has impacted your life now for, well, you said it was 2009, so for about 4 years. Because he was taken to the hospital, he was given blood, he went through 46 pints,
and
he survived.
There was more than just the blood, too. There was more internal injuries.
I didn't
even know about the amount of blood till last. He lost one kidney, I heard about that, half his liver, and broke his pelvis, crushed a lung. Then I found out about the blood later, which I had no idea about, which even shocked me a little more.
Right, which is just as well that you didn't know about it at the time. A friend of mine who's an EMT said that a lot of people don't realize, you know, they're in an accident like he was, and you see the outside wounds or the cuts and things, but an accident, when it throws you or tosses you or something like that, your organs are hurt, and you may not know right then, because you're seeing blood and you're not thinking about the internal organs. So since he lost a kidney and part of his liver, well, thank goodness the liver can regenerate.
Yeah, so the only part of the body.
It does, isn't it? I think, yeah.
Yes, the liver is the only. You can have it could be a dime size small, you know, small as a dime, and it can still regenerate.
Yeah. So that's what, you know, they say about a lot of people who have just practically annihilated their livers by drinking. If they actually stop and stay stopped, they may be able to, you know, have years added to their life. Well.
Yeah.
So what it took you a little time then after, well, of course, because he was recovering and he was home and you were still stunned probably, but what made you decide to start up like the Miracle Comeback. We played on the show, and we'll play it at the end of this half hour before we go into the others. So, a song called 46 Pines that Elvis Field did. And so you have a website. People now are writing songs. A little bit, we're going to play the newest one. But I was very impressed that, now your wife is in Indonesia, we should say that, so you have you have family there now, and there is
very big up and coming, there.
There's a very up and coming band in Indonesia that's making two songs about this, and is it two songs or just that one is in English and one is in local?
It's going to be two separate ones, but it's going to be it's called Power of Hope, and it's going to be the same song, but in two different languages.
Okay, that's what I wondered. So that will be the next song. How did they, I know that, you know, I'm just getting all over myself. I wanted to ask you how you became Muslim, or was this your parents' religion, or were you
a convert? No, I actually grew up Greek Orthodox. My mother was Catholic, but my mother was closer to her mother-in-law and somehow encouraged me to go to a Greek Orthodox church. I didn't understand a word. It was all in Greek, but I grew up somewhat, I guess you could call it, Greek Orthodox. My father's family came from Greece. My mother's family came from Italy. And it wasn't until I became, I think the age I was 24 when I became Muslim in Florida, before I moved up to Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. I wonder, because now your wife is from Indonesia, and that is, I believe, the largest Muslim country in the world, isn't it?
Yes. It was 250,000, but I'm thinking more like 250 million, but I'm thinking closer to 300 million after reading.
Okay. Okay, I mean, I know that there's a lot of Muslims there, so this was just sort of a roundabout way to say, well, okay, you've got family there, and they're bound to have heard about this, so they're going to be doing a song. But I think that's exciting to have it in
it's
another.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Do you have any idea when that one will come out?
I'm definitely going to let you know first. You'll know before anyone. I promise. I'm hoping before Ramadan starts. I'm trying to think. I'm not trying to rush him because I want it to sound, you know, his best.
Oh, sure.
I know I want it to be his best.
Right.
So I'm hoping within a month. About a month.
Okay, because Ramadan starts the 8th, I think, of July, doesn't it?
So it's probably going to be during Ramadan, not before Ramadan. Yeah, because today it's almost July now.
Right, because we've only got a couple of weeks or a little less, I think. Okay, so that will be a nice present for then. But right now, let's go ahead and play Golden Door. This is the new one, and this is his debut, Elvis Theo, and also Blackwell.
Elvis Powell.
I'm sorry, T-H-A-O, Thal.
Yes.
And we had him on the show with you one time, actually. So, he's a musician in Milwaukee, and he was talking about maybe moving to Chicago, we'll see. But here we go.
I'm not going to let him.
Oh, really? Okay.
I told him that. Actually, Golden Door was written by Black Wolf. He was a former lead singer of the international band called Kings Go Forth.
Ah, so he wrote it.
And he wrote the song. Yeah, and Elvis and him are both the lead singers in it. They both sing about the same amount. So I can't say one's a backup singer, one's a lead singer. They're both singers. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I don't want to say, you know.
Right. Well, right. We
but
don't
Golden
want to.
Door,
sure.
Can I tell you something about it before you play it?
Sure, please.
Yeah, Golden Door, when talking to Black Wolf, because he wrote the song, what inspired him about Rashid's story also was in this song. It's referring basically to his coma. He wants this song to inspire other people that are in comas, children, kind of like a therapy song, I guess you can say, because Rashid wasn't a coma, and that's what this is about, getting out of a coma. His time in the coma called Golden Door. So that's where that came out. That's where that came from.
Okay. Yeah, they say when people are in coma, sometimes they know more about what's going on than we think they do.
Yes.
So here we go with Golden Door. I like it. Yes. Okay. So this
Right.
is the
Oh.
latest song, Golden Door, Elvis Sow and Black Wolf. So
Yes.
we should now, this will be available on the website miraclecomeback.com. Am I right?
This will be, we're hoping within the next week or two, Golden Door.
Okay.
46 Pints is already on there.
Right.
Yes.
So, oh, okay. And you want to talk a little bit about you are also like sponsoring, putting on whatever, blood drives.
Yes, I'm trying to get a day off so I can go organize my ninth one. I call it Miracle Comeback. Miracle Comeback 1, 2, 3. I'm trying to get a scheduled date so I can meet the Blood Center of Wisconsin and start my ninth one.
What kind of turnouts do you have? Are they mostly young people because of Rashid, or older, or just pretty much across the board?
It's usually middle age, I would think, because I do plan on doing one for the youth, where Rashid donates for the first time. I just
Right.
haven't got, that's going to take some time. I don't want to just throw together something real quick. I want that to be like the grand finale of blood drives,
Yeah.
where
Okay, that
he
makes
can
sense.
invite the youth.
Yeah. Because, well, and I think that sometimes, we think that for several things, and I think that blood might be one of them, we think that young people might not be as concerned. I mean, when you're young, you think you're going to live forever, and you don't really think that much about, when you get a little older, you know that, like, the blood is really important, and you start wanting to donate more. But like you said, for the kids or the youth, I don't know. There must be an age limit, 16, maybe,
It's
or
16, I believe it's 16 and 17 with a parent's signature on eight signature, and 18, I believe you can donate
okay,
without a parent.
right. Okay, that sounds
I
so.
believe that's what it
With
is. No, it's 16.
yeah, I thought that would be with their consent, maybe a couple of years, but yeah, but 18, it's up to you. But that will be really good, because as a young person, and you said that will be the first time he himself donates, and so
Yes.
that will, and that should get some publicity and things too for it.
I hope so. Yes.
Yeah. If are What about a book? I'm just throwing that. Are
My
you,
book?
yeah.
It's actually, I don't think I told you. I ran into someone who prints shirts and does a couple other things that I, could make use of. And
Right.
I brought up a book idea. I don't know where the book thing came from. I just started talking about a book that I have, and he says, "We publish books too." So I went about 2 weeks ago, and it's actually in the printer right now. They're putting up a sample to see if I like it, then we're gonna, make some changes. But it's actually, yeah, I just had a guy who's used to live in Madison. His name is Hector Alvarez. He's getting his bachelor's in Hollywood pictures. He moved to Madison, lives in Texas. He's trying to make some movies, some small ones, and he keeps asking me about the book. So I had to jump on that because he's interested in the story.
Sure. Okay. Wow. I mean, you're getting involved in all these things, and I'm sure that before 2009, you had no inclination that 4 years later you'd be producing songs, have written a book, have a website, be running blood drives.
Never, never. I guess I never imagined even donating blood myself.
So, well, now you know the importance. Yes, I
Yeah.
thank everybody who does, because the people who've donated have saved my life more than once, with my transfusion. So I know how important it is.
No,
I
I
just,
remember you telling me.
yeah, it's one of those things. And until that's the thing, we have to get the word out for people so that they don't wait until they themselves or somebody in their family needs it before they donate.
Yes.
It just needs to, and it doesn't, when you're healthy, it makes no difference. You can donate a pint. You're going to be fine, trust me.
Yes.
And
And like I, oh, go ahead.
go ahead.
No, what I read, and it's on my website, that 60% of the people can donate, but only 5% do. That's the sad thing about it, you know, and I keep telling people this. That was it. I just think it's important for people to realize the numbers are really, really low.
Right. Like, so that makes no sense. You're saying, okay, there's 100 people, 60 of them are physically able, and only 5 will do. So
5%. Yeah. 60%.
So I wonder if it seems like there was more of it in the past to me, or maybe I was more aware. And then they came up with the platelets and different things rather than whole blood. But blood itself is really important still. Don't let anybody kid you. Yeah. It is. So
I mean, I've heard of someone who threw 100 pints, one person, you know, threw 100 pints of blood before they, you know.
Wow.
You know, it just you don't know.
You don't know. And you don't know. It depends on the shape of the organs and everything. And like you said, well, he had lost the kidney, and then the liver was messed up in. I mean, who knows what else is going on. It was a good thing, I think, that they didn't tell you about the blood till afterwards, because that would have just totally stressed you out even more, if that was possible. And that's wow. So nowadays, what is he doing? Is he a typical kid, or once in a while does he have those reflective moments, or how does that work?
I think he does. He's a regular kid. People always remind him, you know, take what you got out of life, you know, learn from what happened, do your best, you know, don't make the same mistakes, do better, you know, thank Allah over, you know, people, I don't have to tell him anymore. I mean, I do, but most of the people do it for me, you know, they remind him, and I think, you know, sooner or later, he's going to be doing stuff on his own.
Yeah.
You know, but like I said, he's a typical teenager, you know, he's growing like a tree. He's already 6 foot now.
Wow.
He's a giant.
Well, that's okay. And I think it's probably safe to say that he and his brother are not hanging around with the old gang anymore.
No, his older brother is actually teaching him a lot of stuff, you know, and he finally got to respect his older brother even though they're almost the same height and look about the same age, even though they're not, but his older brother came a long ways, you know. I mean, 100%, 100-degree turn, and that helped Rashid.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, yeah, I mean, that had to, if nothing else, that had to impact him immensely. What would you say to people?
He's been through a lot.
Yeah. Well, what would you say to people who are going through the same thing that you were before the accident with the kids, going back to the old neighborhood? I mean, the gang thing. How do you
get involved in gang, period?
Get involved in what? I'm sorry?
Well, you're saying just being involved in gangs, period? How to...
What would you say to the parents? I mean, because you went through it. I mean, you moved because of it. What would you say?
My plan is actually it would probably take about 3 hours to talk to you about it, but I am planning on going to some of these schools that really don't get no attention, you know? Some of the kids that do really bad school, and talk to them about the story so they'll listen to me, and then start talking about gangs, what I had to go through. You don't need to go this direction. This is my plan. It's just time won't allow me right now, but I really do. When the school starts up, I want to go into those schools that really need the help and see if I can make a difference. I'm trying to get Elvis, because he had some family that were in gangs back in the days, you know, when he was younger, and he knows about this stuff too, because he played a gangster in the movie Gran Torino. And
right.
It's real. You know, he's stuff like that. So I'm going to try to get him. He seems interested. I think he can make a big impact more than I can. You know, but, you know, the two of us go in there and start talking to these kids, I think we can make a difference. I'm hoping, and bring Rashid in there, you know, and Rashid to start learning a little bit how to communicate in front of an audience.
I think that's a great goal, because, I mean, well, the three of you, Rashid, because, like, he was the miracle, you as a parent and everything you've learned, and then Elvis, who has the name from movies and things and is the musician. So, yeah, that should
just
work pretty well.
He's actually a public speaker, too. You won't believe the things that he does, too. He's really amazing.
Well, see, that's why I think he should go ahead and move to Chicago, where, so I can hear him more than when he's in Milwaukee. But I know that the two of you travel down there to hear your friend, my friend Muhammad
Muhammad
Mukawi,
Mukawi,
a few weeks ago. Yeah, and then I listened to the, he was a keynote
I'm gonna.
speaker. And yeah, I listened. It's like, wow, he's powerful there. I like that.
Oh my gosh, yes. And Elvis really, really enjoyed him so much. He's like, we actually met a week later after the conference in Chicago, me, Muhammad, and Elvis. And Elvis, well, all three of us are excited to start a new project. And I'll keep that off. I'll talk to you about this later because I want no one knowing about
Oh,
this yet. It's,
okay. A new project.
but it's something
I'm telling
big, something
you
that's
guys
big,
are
really
just
big.
bouncing around with them. Well, I'm going to thank you very much again, Bilal, and I'm sorry about the misspelling of your name. And
Oh,
we're
don't
going
worry
to
about
go out on, we're going to play 46 Pints, which was the first song, which is available right now at www.miraclecomeback.com, as is the
Yes.
story. And then in a week or so, Golden Door will be available.
In about a week or
And
two, yes.
right. And then after the newer one, The Power of Hope from Indonesia comes out, we'll have you back.
Yeah, I'd love to come back. And they'll love it too. The name is the band in Indonesia is D Ziad Nasheed. Young little guys.
Okay, so just that is going to be really good. So, anyway, my friend, thank you so much, and we'll be
Thank you
talking
for having me.
soon. Okay,
All right.
good night. Have a great
Good
weekend.
night.
Happy
You too.
Ramadan. Okay, bye bye.
All right, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
46 Pines, right now.
London board, you're on scene with Dan.
That's affirmative. Any medical attention for approximately a 15-year-old.
2430 said the subject is breathing but not conscious at this time.
Life is America. doctors were there for him, but at the end of the day, really, it was God. We call him Allah. Oh, it's changed our life dramatically. Even his, I mean, in a positive way. 95% of good came out of this.
10 seconds before I crawl. Do I even know what's next?
Welcome back. Now we have Raymond Blaine on Palestine.
Hello, everybody. How are you all doing today? Today I'm going to talk about the Hamas government a little bit and what's going on with the last round of missile strikes that happened earlier in the week and what caused it and what have you. This is the first time that a faction shot rockets out of Gaza to retaliate for Hamas act against their organization to draw fire back on the Palestinians. So I don't know what Fatah's thinking, but I don't agree with that logic at all. So Hamas had full right to go in and try to arrest the guy that they did, and he happened to be a Fatah member. He made rockets, and he was a rocket squad guy, and he was causing problems for them. So they went to try to arrest him. The families decided to shoot at the police and the Hamas security forces, and in the ensuing gunfight, the man was killed. So unfortunately, they're looking at it like they're working for Israel. This has helped Israel because he was on a assassination list for Israel for firing rockets. So for the same reasons Hamas was looking for him, Israel was looking for him.
Right.
So anyway, so on the 17th, there was a story out and it talks about the Hamas unit that they put together to stop this rocket fire. That's basically just bringing a lot of misery to a lot of people that don't deserve it. So it says here, Monday 17th, 2013, Israeli sources have reported that the Hamas movement in Gaza formed a special unit to prevent resistance groups from firing shells into adjacent Israeli areas. Israeli Wala News stated that Egyptian mediators managed to keep the truce holding between Hamas and Gaza and Israel and claimed that Hamas formed a special unit to stop the firing of shells. It added that the unit contained 600 Hamas fighters deployed on the border areas with Israel and operating 24/7. According to the report, Hamas is determined to prevent all armed groups in Gaza from firing shells, even if this means clashing with certain extremist Islamist groups. According to Walla News, senior Israeli army sources confirmed the report and said that this unit was formed before the latest war on Gaza took place and increased its activities after the war. Egyptian sources said that the Egyptian mediators did not only practice pressure on Hamas in Gaza, but also has been actively combating armed groups in the Sinai Peninsula, an issue that significantly reduced the smuggling of weapons to armed groups in Gaza. And then, as everybody knows, during the eight-day war in November of last year, Israeli missiles and shells killed 191 Palestinians, mainly children, women, and elderly, while at least 1,492 Palestinians were injured, dozens seriously. Israeli missiles and shells have killed 48 children, including 16 under the age of 5, in addition to 12 women and 20 elderly. And out of the 1,492 Palestinians that were hurt in that small November bombing, it was included 433 children, 195 under the age of 5, 254 women, and 103 elderly. Those are all the injured just from November. So those people are still recovering. So it's unfortunate, but that's the way it goes.
Right.
But anyway, so
recover. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, what it looks good because, you know, Hamas is actually trying to, you know, because every time Israel, like they say, anytime a rocket comes out of Gaza, they blame the Hamas government.
Yeah.
So finally the Hamas government is taking the steps to stop this rocket fire. Now, there's another development in the Hamas movement as well, and that is there's a huge split in the Hamas movement right now. There's part of it wants to go and continue to support Hezbollah, Iran, Syria, and such. And the other half, since I think 97 is what I read, has been aligned with Qatar and the Sunni people with Qatar and that such. So apparently some of the higher-up Hamas delegates decided they were going to go to Iran and the actual government, the legitimate government of Gaza, the Hamas government, has kept them from leaving and kept them from going as to not stir up more problems, having Hamas members meeting with Iran and such. So it's a lot's going on, you know, and it looks real good for the people, I believe. Coordinating with Israel and cooperating with Israel, I don't see any other way. But at the same time, you know, they need to have their rights taken care of as well. So then John Kerry is supposed to arrive in Palestine tomorrow for high-level meetings. It's not nobody's really thinking anything's really going to come of it because the members and everybody is so far apart still on, you know, just even the simplest things I can't even agree on. And if we have another Oslo Accord, it's going to be ugly. That's not going to be good. So we saw how the first one worked out. So anyway, so this guy, where I've been getting some of my information is from, this is an organization called the International Middle East Media Center. And Syed Banura is one of the, writers for this, and I just wanted to read a little about him because I think he's kind of a special story. His name is Syed Banura. He was born in 1973 in Palestine. He's a prolific Palestinian journalist. He's working for International Middle East Media Center. He's been shot multiple times by an Israeli death squad and is confined to using a wheelchair. He's a tireless activist for Palestinian rights. His work and the work of his colleagues at the Independent Palestinian News Agency, IMEC, are setting today's standards in independent reporting and media ethics to a degree that most major purportedly independent news agencies have problems following the standards set. Syed Banura's articles are published in media worldwide, including NSNBC International. I suggest people go to that one. That's a really good blog spot that he pulls a lot of different news organizations into one area so you can get stories from different sources. And then the IMEMC's website, and that's located at www.imemc.org. And they have a lot of really good articles on not only Palestine, but also Syria. So just a little information for people, and they can go and look up some of the stuff. I'm going to read a story now from the West Bank. This is from today. It's really sad. One resident of Jerusalem Saturday demolished his house with his own hands after Israel issued a demolition order of his home, which houses 8 members of his family. Munther Hujazi, a 57-year-old Jerusalemite living in Al-Sidwa neighborhood in the Old City, said that he demolished his 55-meter-square house after he received a demolition order last year. Hujazi said that he has been fighting in court for the last 3 years and paid fines that amount to 36,000 shekels. Hujazi, one of many Jerusalemites and Palestinians who are forced to demolish their homes, chose to demolish his house with his own hands to save the large sum of money he will have to pay to the Israeli municipality to demolish his house. He said that the cost of using a bulldozer to demolish a house is over 100,000 shekels. If he uses a bulldozer, he will have to pay in order to demolish his house. Hujazi says that Israel has appointed a hearing in September to make sure he demolished his house. He will have to pay yet another fine if he doesn't remove the rubble of his house. It's not only a financial loss, but a psychological one, he said. Umm Muhammad Hijazi's wife expressed sorrow for the demolishing of her house. She said, I've lived in this house for over 14 years. Now we were forced to demolish it under the pretext of not having a permit, as if Israel ever agreed to issue us permits to build homes and live with dignity. Hijazi's child, Nadia, while crying for the loss of her home, said, here I used to sleep with my friends. Now I don't have a bedroom or a home. Advisor on Jerusalem Affairs to the Palestinian President's Office, Ahmad Al-Juraidi, said that Israel threatens to demolish about 20,000 homes in Jerusalem, 450 which to be demolished in 2013. He pointed out that 11 homes were demolished in the last 3 weeks, which sets off alarm bells. I don't know what it sets off alarm bells for, but it's just sad. So tearing down their own homes with their own hands.
That's horrible. After, I mean, building them, or even if not building them, living in them for so long. I mean, a family home is, I don't know, like you said, it's a psychological thing even worse than the physical thing, really. But if he doesn't tear it down, he's going to have to pay this enormous sum. And if he
which
didn't
he's
have
already to, paid enormous sums. To try to save his house.
To no avail.
So very sad. So with John Kerry coming into the area, you know, it just makes me just sick to my stomach, you know, and it's like, why don't you go and talk to some people like that and, you know, and let us know what's up. But the PA is also because of John Kerry's visit, they're starting to arrest leftist activists, so the PA is starting to work hand in hand with the occupation. This was from Syed, who I just read about. He said, Monday, January 24, 2013, the leftist Palestinian People's Party issued a statement strongly denouncing the Palestinian security forces for arresting members of leftist parties, members of the popular resistance movement, by Palestinian military intelligence. Palestinian military intelligence. I might want to just reiterate that. Officers, this past Sunday in Qalqaya, in the northern part of the occupied West Bank, the PPP said that the security forces arrested several PPP comrades and members of other leftist parties in Jawas town north of Qalqaya. PPP added that the arrest targeted activists of the popular struggle against the Israeli annexation wall in their town. The arrests were carried out Sunday before noon when Palestinian security forces broke into homes of several activist members of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, that's PFLP, also the DFLP, and also the PPP, and even members of the Fatah movement of President Mahmoud Abbas. So they targeted these nonviolent activists and arrested them, and they're in jail. So just so you know, there's, you know, with American pressure, the PA is doing things now that the occupation's doing. So
Yes.
It doesn't look good. I don't know.
No, the PA seems like, well, to me, for so long in so many ways, it seems like they've actually been traitors to their own people. Maybe that's harsh, but that's the way I feel. That I don't know.
I don't know why they're targeting nonviolent resistance activists. This is what, you know, this is exactly what they asked for. You know, this is, they said, no, we don't want you guys to pick up arms. We don't want you guys to throw rocks. We don't want you guys to lift a finger. But if, you know, we want you to be nonviolent. So then they go and be nonviolent and they still arrest them because they're, I guess the way to look at it, really, the positive side of it, the half full side of it is, it means that we're making progress because now they're having to arrest them.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're making noise. So they're arresting people now and more people are making noise. So hopefully it'll all work out, but that wasn't a very good one. I didn't think that was cool.
Not a bit.
And then of course we have the PA talking about refusing to resume peace talks without guarantees, which, you know, is just a bunch of crap and it's all for, public consumption, and then once they get in behind closed doors, all bets are off on what might happen.
Yeah.
Luckily the shells fired this week. I don't know if they killed anybody. I think there were two martyrs, but I'm not positive on that. But they mostly targeted Fatah training centers and open fields. So Israel was actually pretty restrained on their response. And they were Katyusha rockets that were fired too. Those are gnarly rockets. They're actually military grade rockets. So, that's not the average rockets that they're firing out of Gaza.
Yeah.
That's how mad Fatah was about them taking out the rocket guy. But it's the way it goes. And Fatah, you know, works with the PA, so it makes me wonder, you know, if they just try to stir things up to try to keep things hot over there in Gaza just so the PA can do their thing over in the West Bank. You know, that always makes you wonder about that too.
Exactly.
After they, you know, they're arresting their activists, they're doing this kind of stuff. So, yeah. And Hamas is just doing police actions. You know, if we knew somebody here in the United States that was building rockets, we'd freaking arrest them.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a no-brainer. You know?
Yeah.
So I understand it's a little different because it's resistance, but at the same time, it doesn't work. So you can't have
It's not. I mean, the Hamas has tried in the last period of time to really make it clear that people didn't need to be shooting rockets, whether they're the, like you said, this kind of gnarly ones or just the, like, practically bottle rocket thing, just because we know that Israel usually retaliates so harshly. And we knew that, it's just going against the whole cause, what we're after. And so, no, I don't blame Hamas at all for, you know, saying, okay, this is ending now.
Well, they haven't had any rocket fire in over a month since they started all that. And it's, then I'm real happy with that because it means the people that are there, that it's not perfect and they're still locked up, but at least they're not ducking and getting bombed, you know? I mean, that's horrible.
Yeah.
But they're still flying drones over and they're still, a lot of low-flying stuff. And, you know, they talk about, you know, they only shot them into, you know, like I said, into unoccupied areas, so to speak. But at the same time, you know, they're running those drones over people's homes and over Gaza, all fully armed, so those people can see those fully armed. And you just wonder when that rocket's got your name on it.
Well, that's it. To live in, my admiration just knows no bounds when it comes to the students because they study under that all the time and without electricity a large amount of time. And it's, I mean, they have these wonderful grades. They're in college. And these wonderful hopes.
The educators too, you know, educators that educate these kids under these circumstances are to be commended as well.
I
can't even imagine trying to do, you know, lesson plans for, you know, they have to have three separate classes because they have so many kids.
Yeah.
Doing three separate lesson plans for three separate, 30, 40 kids in a classroom?
Right.
Wow.
No, it's because they want to learn. And like you say, though, the educators, besides educating them in the basic, things you go to school
without
for.
Without classrooms, even.
Here.
And they destroy them in the Bedouin villages. They run them over with bulldozers, and then they sit out there in the field and teach.
Right. See pictures. And yet, then they're also having to deal with the trauma that the kids are undergoing because they've lived in a trauma. They don't know.
Yeah, how do you teach kids with that much distraction?
Yeah. I mean, and when you know that the kids are worrying about, well, they may not make it through the night or whatever, and, just that kind of tension in them all the time, but yet they are. I mean, they're amazing.
Or they go to school and they come home and they don't have a house to come home to because they demolished it. Come on. And they still continue to just press on. They have hearts of a lion. They really do.
Yeah.
Palestinians, they're the best. They're the best. Under occupation, they have really made the best of it. But we're going to fight to get them off, get the occupation to end. That's
definitely. This never should have been, and it's gone on for way too long.
But it can end in a blink of an eye, and I believe that firmly.
I think it's going to, and
they're on the wrong side of history.
Yeah.
They really are. I'm just excited that I'm involved with it and that I'm able to help and talk to the actual people and find out what's really going on and that kind of thing. So it's kind of nice.
It's so important to just, even if we don't have money or not that much to help that way and all, just support is paramount to them. They need to know continually that people other places are on their side
around the world are listening to them and giving them a voice.
They're not
absolutely.
People
paying attention.
Yeah.
Well, when they got the bid for the UN, 160 countries voted yes.
Yes.
That's a pretty resounding hello. We're here.
Exactly. People said, well, that makes a lot of difference, and it doesn't, but it does in the fact that it's like, okay, all these countries say yes, you are a country. You're being harmed, you're being done wrong, and that's really.
Well, that's in my mind. It makes me feel like I'm on the right track.
Exactly. I just read, though, and this was, of course, Israel seems to be a fascist country, but they have now made it, and I think this happened a little while ago, illegal, whatever. If you celebrate the Nakba, which is the catastrophe, which was May 15th, 1948.
Yeah, that's been going on for years.
Right, but now then they have said if you actually celebrate that, if you're part of an NGO, a non-governmental organization that does this, they're going to stop some kind of funding for those NGOs. If they even acknowledge or celebrate, it's not really a celebration. It's more an acknowledgement, a memorial for that.
Right.
Because they're taking it out of their books and everything. They don't want to even hear about it or talk about it. So they're trying to wipe out history.
Which is wonderful because it just shows their racist policies and it just exposes them for what they are. And so they can continue to pass these laws and do these things, because then it's on paper that it's blatantly in your face that it's racist.
Yeah.
Wonderful, But we're going to continue to acknowledge the Nakba and acknowledge the catastrophe, but every day is a catastrophe. Every day is the Nakba there. Every day that this goes on is another Nakba. It's a catastrophe every single minute of every single day in Palestine. This is not correct. This is not right. I've managed this week to meet an actual Arab Israeli. I'm really happy about that, so I'll be chatting with her more and picking her brain, and she's talking, going to talk to me and give me some stuff about living with the occupation, not under occupation. So that should be interesting over the next couple of weeks. I also have a special guest, possibly July 10th, a girl from Gaza who's a journalism student and has done an online magazine and also interviewed Harry Fear and lives in Gaza, and she's going to start coming on with me and talking about what she's got going on there in Gaza. So hopefully we can coordinate that in the next week or so.
Where is Harry right now?
I believe he's in Gaza, but I don't know that for a fact. But I'm pretty sure he's over there still. Yeah, because he comes in and out quite a bit.
Yeah.
He
must be going in and out through Egypt, I would think.
Yeah, he's coming in and out legally, I would imagine. He could even be going through Israel, for all we know. I mean, really, you can do it. It's not easy, but you can do it.
The
delegations that come from Seattle do it. They go through Tel Aviv and then into Palestine and then into Gaza.
To me, it seems scary to, after you've made it known your feelings, flying into Tel Aviv just seems like,
you got to understand that 50% of the people don't agree with their government's policies. So there's still quite a few people there that are worth seeing, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I guess it could be a little scary, but as long as you understand what you're going into and you play by their really screwed up rules, then you should
You'd be okay once you get there and away from the airport. I mean, I would just be thinking that, you know, it might be once you land, when they ask this and this and this and, you know, go through, because
you practice it a lot.
Yeah.
You practice your speech.
they say it's not that easy to, you know, I mean, the questions and all that. Now, on the other hand, of course, if you have any Jewish blood on you and you prove it, I mean, you're right in.
Right.
But that makes that where the difference comes in.
Well, that's how they're diverse. See, they're diverse. Yeah. You can be Asian, you can be black, you can be white, you can be all these things, but you have to be Jewish.
Yeah. But then,
their diversiveness is Jewish-only diversiveness.
When they had all the people from Africa come in, the Ethiopian Jews and all of them, and now, you know, they've totally made their life a hell, and they've been shipping them back out.
They're shipping all the illegals out, because not only did Ethiopian Jews show up there, but a lot of others, Africans showed up there because there was work, because they kept all Palestinians out.
Right, you know, and their own countries.
They had somebody to do the menial labor.
Yeah.
Right. So, and now they're afraid it's going to screw up the Jewish homeland and their Jewish character, I guess is what they call it.
Yeah, and their blood, because whatever, you always have mixing and mingling, and a racist country doesn't like that. Right.
No.
Their racist government doesn't like that. So
it's odd, but at the same time, it's being exposed more and more each day.
Yeah, that is the good part. I mean, so this kind of stuff, while it is so disgusting to us and we get upset, like you said, I mean, look on the bright side, because it means that we're making progress. So
I really believe that. I really believe that there we have them really aggravated, and really aggravated to me is very good. I like seeing the organizations aggravated, because they can't lie and they can't go around and tell these things and brainwash people any longer. So, and the Jewish-run media is not going to continue to brainwash people as well, because people are onto them. And that's a lot of the reason why we have these problems.
Well, the media still is brainwashing a lot of people in the country we're in, the United States. But that's just because Americans have let themselves get so dummied down, they actually believe the mainstream media.
I don't. Yeah. Everyone I ever talk to always laughs about the mainstream media. So I wonder who these people are that do believe the mainstream media.
I know them. Trust me.
I'm glad I don't know them.
I would say good for you, yes. No, I know them. And like you say, you know, sometimes you say something about the mainstream media and they, oh, yeah. And then they just can't wait to tell you what's on Fox. I mean, and they believe it or what? No, I know them, Blaine. Sorry, they exist.
I know they exist. I guess they stay away from me. They don't like the truth, and they surely don't like people that check sources.
No.
Go back, you know, people. Don't take my word for it. Don't take Ruth's word for it. Go and look up these different publications and make your own decision, you know, and then tell people about it and make and see if they have the same opinion and say, am I crazy? Am I really seeing what I'm seeing? Or is this not the same?
Yeah. That's it. I tell people, you know, you don't have to believe me. It's everywhere. Go online. Look this up. Go to the library. You know, whatever. Check it out.
Look up the history. You know, I mean, look the stuff up and become an activist, too. I mean, get the word out. These people need our help. And nobody else is listening. And just one extra person each time that I talk on this show, it can make a world of difference.
It can.
You know?
Remember that quote, and I won't even get the quote right. I think it was Margaret Mead, but I can be totally wrong on that, too. But the quote was something to the effect that, like, never underestimate what a small group of people can do or the changes they can make. And then the quote says, in fact, that's the only, you know, way that we have had changes because it matters. I mean, a person here, there, and they get together, they make a difference.
They do, and so everybody just, you know, and be kind to one another, you know. We're all in this together, guys. I mean, whether we like it or not,
we need one world.
We're one people. We're divided by governments and land borders and water resources or whatever resources, and it boils right down to it. We really are just one group of people.
That's it.
You know?
We are.
So, come on, we need to all figure out how to get along, and that means making other people get along, too.
Well, that's true.
Getting rid of the people that are intolerant, because there's no room for this world for intolerance.
Well, we're going to look forward to some of your guests coming on, and we will see you next week then, Blaine.
Wonderful. Raymond. Thank you so much. This is Raymond Blaine on Palestine. Everybody have a good week.
Have a good one yourself, my friend. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Ruth.
Bye. Now we have Sarit Jacobson with Eye on Israel. Hi, Sarit.
Hi. The Eye on Palestine is a little very painful to look at. But yes.
What is happening now?
More hate crime.
What
new racist laws?
Oh,
building new settlements fast. It's continuing. Yes.
Well, you sent me something. I wanted to ask you about it. You sent a article, a piece, and I actually shared it too, about the a group of Muslim imams from Turkey, Nigeria, United States, several countries, like 8 or 10 countries,
including Palestine.
Yeah, this made me a little barfy. They were going to commemorate whatever. They went to check out some of the Holocaust camps and all this. And, you know, they're supposed to go back to their countries and tell all the Muslims about how horrible it was. Well, and I know I've been called a Holocaust denier. I'll go on record. I'm not a denier. I may be a revisionist, maybe, but not even that much. So much. A lot of people were killed besides Jewish people.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and there has been so many Holocausts in the world, but yet if you say the word Holocaust, you automatically think of Germany.
They capitalized on it.
Yeah, yes, that's what I say. You know, they play the Holocaust card so many times that has made me just, ugh. But now with this, I wonder, you know, why they should go to Palestine and see what genocide is, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
That was such a, no, you sent that to me, and
One of the reasons I think they did it is to prove the Israeli government wrong. The Israeli government is lying to the people of Israel and saying that the Muslim people stood with the Nazis.
Yeah.
And that's how they create all this hate towards them. And I think they're trying to fight back the peaceful way through telling it. But it's hardly anyone to talk to.
Yeah. But that makes sense. That this way you can show that no, Arabs and Muslims are not like anti. And now, you know, years ago in Chicago, I remember an Arab man and his wife, they took their kids out of public school because they were teaching about the Holocaust here. And I know that they were bringing like lawsuits against him, trying to get the kids back in school. But you know, I do not know what the outcome of that was. But so I know that there are complete Holocaust deniers or people who say it was nothing like we were told. And but I don't think that most Muslims don't feel that. But you're right. That's what this group is to do. They're going to, you know, then go back home. Evidently, there were eight from America have done this before, but this time they wanted people from other countries too.
Yes.
To go.
I don't think they see Israel as a Jewish state. So it's easier for them to have. And religious people are all about love. A true religious person.
Well, true religious, yeah. Yeah.
Is not going to ever, I assume, kill or before it.
Yeah, because true religions, when you there may be differences on the outside, and even not just religious, but spiritual paths, but when you get down to the very core, it's love and compassion. So
absolutely.
They all have in common. But they have been so dirtied up with, well, individual people and groups and their egos, and that's why we had the wars, you know, fighting over, like, the Crusades and things, trying to convert people. You can't truly convert somebody when you force them to, like, leave their church and go to yours. They haven't converted in their heart. That's such a bizarre thing to do, in my opinion. But
absolutely. And we also have hate crime on the rise towards Palestinians. And what happens is they pretend to take care of it but hide evidence. And if it happens the other way around, if a Palestinian commits a crime, they get more than a full punishment. But if an Israeli commits a crime towards them, they get away with it.
Right. What has been happening lately, Sari? I mean, has there anything?
So the police says they're all shocked that this man was totally, old man was beaten up by settlers, just one example of many. He's about 80 years old. Just taking his sheep for a walk, you know, in the hills of Hebron, and he's brutally attacked by two men on his own land. The police acted like they were all into the case and going to take care of it, and they acted all shocked. But then they hide the evidence and never even look at it, never even invite him to come identify them, even though he said he could identify them. He was all clear-minded, not senile.
Yeah.
And it's just like a apartheid circus keeps going on. They're building new roads, by the way, through the settlement. And the new roads are cutting right in the middle of the Palestinian villages. For example, there's a Palestinian village called Tzeftefa. It's just passing it right in the middle, cutting it a 10, 12-lane highway right in the middle of a small village.
Right, and so that's separating people from their families, from their schools.
Provoking them, too. It's like my friend from Israel says, they're just provoking them. And she's not even into politics, you know?
See, right. So when somebody who isn't into it sees what's going on.
Yes.
Well,
it's really crazy.
Yeah,
the way they treat their own people, I found out a lot. You know what else I found out? You guys be blown away. Okay, you know how there's the Ashkenazi Jews and then the Arab Jews.
Yes.
So when the Arab Jews came to Palestine after it was turned into Israel, they had children. Guess what they did with their children? They stole their children and did Nazi experiments on them, and now they're finding out. They did diseases, gave them worms, did all kinds of horrific medical experiments of them, especially that you can Google the children of Yemen, Jewish Yemen children. So the way they even treat their own is unbelievable.
Because I
will send you some links about it so we can get it out there.
Right, because that's the kind of thing that you're appalled because they're supposed to be so family oriented and value their children so much.
The people that are doing it, at the time Israelis are actually most of them pretty decent people. They don't know what's going on. They're told so many lies. Their propaganda is so good. When I watch Israeli TV, I'm like, oh my God, they're so good at lying. They lie so like straightforward and with a smile on their face. They make Fox News look like bad liars.
Wow. Wow.
No human being is that evil.
No.
Well,
so,
maybe a few.
A few, wow. Yeah, there's always... that's it, because I just can't believe that a whole country could be that bad. But I remember, it's been several years ago, I saw a video. A lady was speaking in Australia, and she was saying that there is no way that the Israelis cannot know what's going on. But I think she's wrong because, like you say, I mean, they're in their small area and they see this news, they read the papers, and it's all such great lies.
I used to think like her, too, till lately I've been watching Israeli Channel 2 because I like Hebrew still. I like listening to things in Hebrew. And I'm amazed. Also, I'm in about 50 Israeli groups on Facebook. I like to go. So I quoted some people from my favorite group because I think it's, you know, the good Israeli people are in so much pain. It's so hard for them to watch it that they're going crazy, like me. I also go crazy. It drives me crazy to see what's happening in Palestine. So the Palestinian children like to have every summer a puppet show. Well, Israel says, no, you cannot do that. So my Israeli friends are pissed off.
You can't have
I can't have a puppet show for little elementary school children even in Jerusalem, which is, I used to go there, everything's in Arabic in Jerusalem when I used to go there. So my Israeli friends are saying there are no butterflies in the ghetto and they will not have a theater. They're being cynical and don't know what to do anymore. Then another friend says, I guess they're making apartheid kosher, huh? Then another girl says that she wishes that the settlements will be taken away from them. And she also wishes that every settlement, they will build a road for Palestinians in the middle because she's also angry. And she's a university teacher. Then another friend says that Israel lost all morals all humanity. They are the opposite of the Jewish religion. Zionism is just breaking the law. Everything that is moral is not allowed, and everything that is immoral is legal. This is what is happening here, legal. Everything that protects human here is illegal, and it's true.
Wow. So totally turned around, upside down.
I just translated what's happening in the Israeli group of the good people. They're pissed off, yeah.
That's good.
They're really, they sound even, it
That's
is good,
good
but I wish there was more of them.
Well,
I wish they were all like that.
But, you know, that's the thing. That's what, right at the end of Blaine's, that's what we were talking. You know, a few people can make a big difference because, like, you're translating things from there. You're putting it out. I mean, you are so putting things out in English and in Hebrew. And
yeah, who would have known there's people there that think like us, you know?
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you've had some on the show, and it's like, okay, this is good. We're finding people where you least expect, actually.
It shows the 99% really wants to live in peace.
Yes.
I'm talking about not even the bad right-wingers, they want to live in peace. They just don't believe the other side wants to live in peace.
Right.
I fight with them every day, and that's where we have hiccups in trying to explain to them that they want to live in peace, too.
Right. They want it their way. And
oh yeah, they do.
They're not much for compromise or listening to the other side. So the right.
Absolutely correct, you are.
But no, they do want. Well, you know, smart people realize that we all just get so much more done when we're living in peace. And like you said, the 99%. But the 1% who makes big money off of war. Of course, they want the wars to continue, and they want to keep selling arms and all the support that goes with wars.
Oh, but, yeah. Arms is a big business in Israel. They sell six in the world in selling arms.
Six? Wow.
Number six. Very small country, too. I could walk it.
It's a very small country. But there's... Well, that's it. There's so much... intelligence, so much research, so much going on there. If it would only just all be put to the good, I mean, how wonderful. Instead of people all hating Israel, you know, I mean, they could say, wow, we can learn from them, and look, they've done this and this and this. And, like, I know you are like me, we're very impressed with the vegan movement in Israel.
Oh, it's the biggest in the world, I think. Also, two, three, 4 days ago, they surrounded Bibi Netanyahu's house at night. They broke the police barricades, and there was 1,000 people outside his house not letting him sleep. I think he got scared. But the police beat them up and arrested them.
Oh.
And they were Occupy Israel. They were outside his house doing mic checks and everything.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge. I saw pictures.
That's wonderful.
Huge. I watched the live stream. It was fun to watch them speak. Lots of good people.
Yeah. But
Netanyahu has the support of the settlers.
Oh. Well, the settlers. No, I just can't. They, I think, have their heads stuck up their butts because I don't know how they
how they want the Messiah to come.
I guess that's
if they believe that if it's all clear of Palestinians, the Messiah will come. Somebody told them, probably from the 1%.
Yeah.
They're smart at dividing us.
Well, you do wonder, how do they look at themselves in the mirror? Because they go in, they, you know, just bulldoze somebody's house and build a settlement.
Absolutely.
Or just go in and throw out the Palestinians. I mean,
the Palestinian guy was said one day he was going to a wedding. He came back. They're already living there. They cannot even leave the house, or they will take over.
Even if you don't leave the house, I mean.
Even if you don't leave.
Over, but yeah, I mean.
Doesn't it sound insane?
Well, that does. I mean, that's something we can't even imagine. I think during the, what was it, during the Russian Revolution, that pretty much happened. The people who had nice homes and all, they were relegated to like maybe one room, and a lot of people were moved into their homes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that was a little different. But I mean, it was the same. My God, this is my house, and who are all these people? But
I know that's when my great grandmother escaped Russia and walked to Palestine.
Ah. Well, she walked? I did not realize that.
They walked through Turkey to Palestine, and they were very welcomed by the Palestinians, by the way, who were very nice to them.
Well, yeah. And that's how it went until, well, these people got this wild idea, Herzl, you know, the Zionists, that they were going to steal some land, which they did.
They want to, I'm starting to think that they want to steal more land, and starting to think all kinds of things, because the truth is so hard to find. It's so elusive these days.
Right. Well, they you know, they've got the Golan Heights, and
They're beautiful, the Golan Heights.
Well, they would be more than happy to take over Syria, so, or more parts of it than that. So we'll see. Israel would like to expand for sure, because, like you said, it's such a small country.
Tiny, tiny. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pictures are, yeah.
There's magic in the air there. I'm not kidding. Every time I land there, it feels the air. Maybe it's the hot breeze from the ocean, Mediterranean Ocean, very nice.
The Mediterranean, yeah. Elevation, I'm not sure how high it is there. But just the fact that for so many hundreds of years, different religions have considered it a holy land. You know, all of that energy built up. And it's too bad that...
Could it be because they have the best pot on the planet?
Well, that could have something to do with it now.
That was when I lived there. It was the best on the planet.
Well,
it was from Gaza, so thank you, Gaza people.
Yeah. Well, in that case, it's too bad that the government people in Israel aren't using it.
They're lost because the Palestinians know how to grow.
Well, Palestinians can grow anything if they have their
land. They can. A very beautiful culture.
And they have still managed to grow things in land that, you know, we would probably say, okay, that's it.
Absolutely.
The white phosphorus.
They build stairs. They grow on stairs.
Yeah, but, you know, all those chemicals that were dumped on them, like in Gaza, that doesn't just kill people and harm people. It harms the land. And,
it does.
You know, and then so much has been taken away because you can't grow anything up to, 300 meters or something from the towers around Gaza. And then, in the West Bank, they take out the... olive groves and orange groves. A friend in Gaza had his grandfather's farm was taken out. He had an orange grove, and they
do eco-terrorism all the time. The settlers love to burn olive trees. They do it every day.
Yeah. Those people are hateful, spiteful, but that must be it. They really think that if they do this, then the Messiah will come. They have to have that, and it has to be encouraged by the rabbis.
Yes, and they have some bad rabbis there, or not even...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how they even got to those ideas. Because in the Torah, it says that you are supposed to treat your foreigner in your country, not just treat them well, but take care of them.
Well,
you're responsible for them.
They
totally took the Jewish religion and twisted it. Or maybe they saw books in it that I didn't see. There's a lot of books in there.
I'm sure they twisted it, just like some of these. Look at that idiot pastor in Florida here who.
Oh, yeah.
About burning the Quran. And any Christian with any kind of sense would say, well, he has nothing to do with the Christian religion. And so it would be the same with some of the rabbis. Just like some of the imams and different people, the Muslim people, they're not all on the straight and narrow. They have their renegades too. So I shouldn't call them renegades, because renegades is not necessarily a bad word. But I mean, they have people who don't follow what they preach. Who go
absolutely
off and, you know, that they find a few verses and twist them around, and then that's what they preach on continually. So I don't know.
So they're also going to evacuate the Bedouin from the Negev desert. They're going to kick them out again.
I was going to say, I mean, I read about some group of Bedouin.
I know.
They had been displaced from their home something like 14 times.
Yes.
What kind of... I mean, these people are so stressed that they have to have that post-traumatic stress disorder, beyond a doubt. I mean, but because it's ongoing. And their kids are born into it. Their kids have never been without it.
The guy that is doing it is calling... it says the displacement can be a blessing that will make it possible for Bedouin children to leap in time into a midst of the 21st century. It's so not true. They are so much more advanced than any people I've ever seen in so many ways.
See, he's just giving some kind of excuse. Like, okay, well, we're going to do this because this will be so much better for them. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Like they are not civilized enough.
Yeah, right. Because they have these, their culture is totally different, and they tend to move more on the land, but they use the land, they're close to the land, which is a wonderful thing, and we could all, I think, benefit by being closer to the land.
They know how to survive in the roughest terrain on the planet.
Yeah.
It takes incredible amount of intelligence.
Yeah.
I got to spend time with them, and I got to see their true face when I was ill, and they really took care of me.
Wow.
Yeah, they were really good people. They could have done anything they wanted with me. I was literally ill and passed out, and they were great, beyond great.
They probably have native indigenous cures and help and medicines and things, too.
They did give me indigenous cures, and I was feeling better, yes.
Yeah. Yes, so, and then that's a whole other story, but, you know, these
they told me I need to go see a doctor, so I did, and I actually needed surgery. They knew.
Yeah, they knew. I mean, so that's it. They know how far they can go.
Soon as I arrived in their tribe, I was a guest, they sent the medicine man to me.
Wow, okay.
Really old.
Yeah.
How'd they know?
That wisdom has been passed down.
Yeah.
That's what the pharmacy companies want to destroy, and the American Medical Association and all of them, they don't like that. You know, they
absolutely
don't want they want people to stay, you know, semi-ill so that they can push the pills on them.
Oh, they were healthy. And they have people live to be really old. The women and the little girls were healthy, too.
Yeah.
It was in Egypt. I stayed with them for a week here and a week there. I used to go back and stay with them. I know one girl that had a bad experience there, but mine was the best.
Well, and
she
you know
stayed
what?
With a different tribe.
Right, and it would, I mean, it wouldn't even be reasonable to think that once in a while somebody's not going to have a bad experience. I mean,
absolutely, humans.
You know, because we can do that. You can have somebody come from another country and come here, and depending on the circumstances, I mean, somebody may have a wonderful time, and somebody else may just because of circumstances get in some place where something horrible happens. Well, like, people come to Chicago all the time from everywhere and love it, but yet several years ago there were some tourists, they went to Chinatown and someone was killed. Okay?
Yeah.
Obviously, their stay was not all that great, but, you know, I don't know what happened. I have no idea. So, it, you know, circumstances sometimes, yeah. Give it experience, but we are going to have to leave. I will see you. We'll all see you back here next Wednesday.
Great.
Yes. Okay. So have a wonderful week, and thanks so much because, yeah, you're bringing things to us that we didn't know about. So that's all. That's all good.
Great. Just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, we'll have more. So thank you, Sari, very much.
Okay. Bye bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.